Today's episode of the Worn and Wound podcast is brought to you by Melbourne Watch and their new Collins Automatic Moon Phase. Stay tuned to a bit later in the episode to learn more about the Melbourne Collins.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Worn and Wild podcast. My name is Blake Bettner. Today I'm joined by Zach Weiss. Hello, Zach.
Hello, Blake.
I'm also joined by Zach Kazan. Zach Kazan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Thanks for being here. And we're also really pleased to be joined by a friend of ours, a collector. You know him as @WatchSymmetry on Instagram. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to kick it over to you and let you introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks. Yeah. My name is Thomas. I go by Watch Symmetry on Instagram and have been collecting a variety of things from German to Japanese and a lot of different watches, and look forward to talking with you all. I really like what you all do and how you keep it real for all of us.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And thank you again for joining us. But German to Japanese, that sounds interesting. So let's hop right into to a wrist check in that case. And Thomas, what are you wearing on your wrist today?
Today I have the Grand Seiko SBG Y003.
Very nice.
Excellent. We talk about that watch occasionally. Thomas and I chat on DMs, and I think he knows that's one of my favorites.
Okay.
So thank you for wearing that. Thank you. Yeah, okay. A little salt and moon. Okay. That's an exceptional watch, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And Zach Weiss, what's on your wrist? Is it a Grand Seiko?
It's not. It is a.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Well, maybe soon. We'll see. Christopher Ward, Worn and Wound Limited Edition, in the blackout version. I honestly had to look to see what watch it was wearing because I like forgot. It's just been on all day. I've been running around. But yeah, it's a good
sign. That's a good sign, though. That's a testament to just how comfortable that watch is, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So. Zach Kazan, what are you rocking today?
I am wearing a Grand Seiko. I'm wearing my Grand Seiko SBGH 271.
Jeez. We're just out of the
We're
out of the game here.
You gotta get with it. Get with the Grand Seiko cult.
Yeah. I'm wearing an Omega Speedmaster. This is the new 3861 movement with the brushed bracelet and Hesalite crystal, which is also quite comfortable. I wear it on this bracelet. So I took the bracelet off last week to try it on a few straps because it's a Speedmaster. Mm-hmm. And surprise, surprise, it looked great on all of them. But I kept wanting to wear it back on the bracelet because this bracelet is just so comfortable. And it is just kind of like silky over the wrist. I actually wear it a little bit loose on this and it completely disappears, just like the Christopher Ward.
Yeah.
Which I really like. I don't want to, you know, it doesn't really hinder my movement or whatever I'm doing throughout the day. It's just kind of there when I need it, which I really appreciate about watches. So,
yeah.
Well, some watches. Yeah. Watches that do it right, at least.
Sure.
So we've had, there's a few pieces of news that that I would like to discuss this week. And we're going to start off with news just from yesterday. We'll jump right in to news from Hamilton. And this is a new chronograph that they released. It's the Chronograph H. It's a hand-wound version of the popular chronograph that has been around for a minute, the Intramatic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this is, it's hand-wound. How cool is that? There's no date there. It's 40 millimeters. It's a little bit thinner. At just a hair over 14 millimeters thick, I believe. It comes in a white and black dial. This was a bit of a surprise to see, but a very welcome one at that. I like hand-wound chronographs.
You're wearing one.
Says the guy with the Speedmaster on his wrist. What do you guys think about this watch? And what are your feelings on the hand-wound versus the automatic chronographs?
Yeah, no, I was pretty surprised to see this just because I didn't expect them to bring out a manual wound chronograph really at all, let alone in this style, because they've done a few different automatics and different sizes. But it's pretty exciting. And, you know, I used to own one of the original 1969, they're the Chronomatic at that point. And so I've been excited to see the various versions of this come out. It's a watch I miss a lot. But
was that a hand wound?
That one was, so no, that was one of the first Caliber 11s. But the Chronograph B, I think it was called. So this, I think, is like the Chronograph B. The other ones were sort of a mix between Chronograph B and this. And then this is really close to that, the Valjoux models that preceded the automatic chronograph version that I had. very cool watch.
Yeah, absolutely. The Valjoux was 73.
Something like that, yeah.
That a lot of brands used kind of back then, from Stoa to Volcane to well, a lot of people use it. Thomas, what's your take here, and what's your take overall just on hand-wound chronographs?
Yeah, I actually really like it. I love the two sub-dials. I think it's really nice and balanced, and the manual wind aspect, I'm assuming, is going to make it thinner. And I think it actually makes the watches nice to wear. Honestly, for me, I feel like you get a better interaction with the watch when it's hand wound. So I'm really looking forward to seeing these.
Yeah, absolutely. One other small detail that I really like about this is the whole the tachymeter scale is also in white, so it's it doesn't have that point of contrast that I believe the automatic versions have. Zach Kazan, what are your thoughts here?
I agree with Zach. I think I was not expecting this watch to be released. It feels kind of like the enthusiast focused chronograph that I think some of us wanted as they were kind of reintroducing their chronograph line over the last few years with the various Intramatic releases. But it's a really handsome watch. It's a little bit thick still, even though it's hand wound. It's over 14 millimeters thick, which is a little disappointing. But I agree with Thomas that there's a real benefit in interacting with your watch that way. There's just something special about a hand wound chronograph, especially, I think.
So luckily we'll be getting one in shortly for review, hopefully. Yep. But I do think this one has a box sapphire, whereas the previous ones were like 14 with a flat sapphire.
Yeah, so that could be a lot of
I'm hoping that makes the difference sort of on the wrist, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that could do it for sure.
Yeah, either way, they're clearly listening, right? Hand wound. I mean, this just feels like, this feels kind of right in the sweet spot for our crowd. I appreciate it. Well done, Hamilton, here. We'll have a lot more about this on the site. Link down below, so check it out if you haven't seen that new release. And then stepping back to last week, we had a couple of watches that, they were out there. Boy, let's start with, there was one from Tissot. It was a watch called the Memphis. So this is a quartz watch. It's under $400. It comes in a couple sizes, 34 millimeters and 41 millimeters. And Zach Weiss, I think you are familiar somewhat with the Memphis group, Ettore Sats.
Yeah. I mean, I have to try and remember back to my graduate school days. But yeah, Memphis group is a big name in Italian design. They're known for really aggressive high contrast patterns and kind of sculptural forms. And there was sort of like, it was almost like an anti-aesthetic sort of a thing going on there. So very sort of aggressive. It's just very bold, very blocky, a lot of contrast. And Ettore Sats, famed Italian designer who's a member of the group. And I don't know, my history teachers might get mad at me, but I would almost say probably the most famous person from that group. He's designed other watches as well, and this must have been, a watch that they worked on. Mm-hmm. But there were some cool Seikos he's done, and, very much a very distinctive counterpoint to, like, the Vigaros of the world, who are super sleek and swoopy and futurist. This is, like, a very kind of, a more kind of classic furniture sort of type designer. And, I absolutely adore this watch. I think I missed out on it already. I didn't even think about that it would be fly off the shelf. But last we looked at Tissot's website, they were not there anymore.
So. Yeah, so it looks like they are limited. The 34 millimeter versions are $1,700 each. The 41 millimeter version in steel and gold is limited to $2,500, and then the all black version is limited to $3,000. So these are very distinctive watches that kind of set, I don't know, it kind of knocks you off what you're expecting to see from a watch, not only in the case, how the strap is incorporated into the case, but also in the dial and how you're experiencing the passage of time. There's not a traditional seconds hand here. It's a rotating disc right in the center. Zach Kazan, you wrote about these watches. Is there anything here that that you wanted to get across?
I'm a pretty big fan of these watches. I appreciate that Tissot is trying something a little bit different here, and it's not just another kind of like reissue of a, you know, like historic dive watch or something. I like that they're pulling from this time period. The Memphis group existed in the 80s, but their design influence really kind of penetrated in the 90s. Like if you think about the color and the geometric shapes that they use, particularly in their furniture designs, that really comes through in just a lot of, you know, like pop culture that you start seeing in the 90s. So very influential design group. And I was glad to see that this watch seemed to be successful for Tissot. I wish I could have snagged one, but I'm glad that they had a success here. Hopefully it will encourage them to continue to, you know, experiment with, you know, watches like this and pull from this time period.
Yeah. Thomas, is this a design style that you are familiar with? And how do you feel it translates into these watches here?
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with the design style, but I actually really do like the design. It is quite bold. But also, I think just due to the size of all the markers and the way the hands are laid out, I think it's also super legible. So I think, you know, good contrast, you can see it in any light. And I actually really like the small rotating seconds disc. It reminds me of an option you can get on Oxen Junior watches.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then also on the Sub Delta Quattro, it has a small rotating seconds disc as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's actually really calming. You can still see that the watch is working, but especially with the quartz, it's going to sort of negate that quartz effect, I think, a little bit, and just keep the watch a little bit more pure.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it is something that you see in a few watches. I think Ian Schoen makes a watch that has kind of a window that has a rotating yep. dot that will come through every now and then, so you can make sure it's working. That Chronotempus Habering, I think, had something similar.
Some sort of on-off indicator.
Yeah, so you could just, yeah, at a glance, you could see like, all right, my watch is up and running here. Yeah. I'm good to go. But yeah, I like it, and I like seeing something really original being put out there by Tissot, especially at this price point. It's just really cool.
And good point on the 90s. I feel like now I'm thinking about it, like the Seinfeld theme is almost like a Memphis. Their graphics.
Oh yeah, for sure. <You know?
laughs> and Trapper Keepers and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the deal with Memphis stuff? Anyway, I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself there.
I set you up without meaning to, so it's my fault.
All right, so moving on to something that that is also very visually distinctive in a very different way. And this is something from Maurice Lacroix. This is a new watch in their Akon line. This is the Venture GMT. So this takes that kind of squared off, octagonal, Royal Oak-ish case design that they've had with the Akon and adds a new complication here along with a new bezel, which gets kind of a two-tone bezel. And boy, there's a lot going on with this watch. There's a lot to pick apart. I know that this has been kind of a lightning rod here in the office with some people kind of falling on the love side and some people falling on, the other side of that. And this is, I mean, at its core, it's a simple looking GMT. You could say that there's some Explorer 2 reference in there a little bit with the orange GMT hand. The black dial has a red hand. And boy, I'll hold off my opinion. Zach Kazan, I want to get your fresh take on this.
So I'm on the other side that you mentioned when it comes to this watch. I think this one doesn't really work for me. It's big, you know. It's 43 millimeters. I get the point of the bezel having like the contrasting colors, but to me, it just kind of looks like an eye chart, and it's not very it's just not very appealing. But I will say, like, I don't have a ton of experience with the Icon. I've handled an Icon, I'm not sure exactly what the proper pronunciation is, but I've handled one at a watch meetup, and it's like a very like high quality, you know, well-constructed watch. Like, I was impressed with it, even though the aesthetic isn't really my thing. And people like really love these watches. Like, they have a very dedicated like group of enthusiast fans. Mm-hmm. So go for it if that's
your you're not standing in line to buy one though. Okay. But what are you a fan of the Royal Oak?
I mean, I appreciate the Royal Oak. It's not like, it's not a watch that I aspire to or would choose to buy. Should I, if I like had the opportunity and there were like other things like presented to me. But you don't have to hold back. I appreciate it. It's just not really my thing.
Do you judge people that wear a Royal Oak Zach? Be honest with us.
Absolutely not. I have friends who own Royal Oaks. Royal Oak is a an iconic watch. But it's just not really my style. I'm not into like the integrated bracelet thing.
Okay. Is that into the okay? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fine. Thomas, where do you fall here?
For me, it's a little bit big, and the bezel design there is a bit interesting. But I actually think it is an interesting design. I think it's very unique looking. It's fairly distinctive, and I actually think that alternation of the colors for each one of the hour markers on the bezel actually could help with some legibility or just easily being able to sight onto it. Mm-hmm. I do wonder though, just based off of the way the case is shaped and everything, how easy that bezel is going to be to grip if you wanted to do it at the 12 and 6 o'clock area. It looks like to me you might have to pick a different grip to really actuate that bezel. And I actually do like also the case back. I love that they printed all the time zones and city codes there. I think it just is a fun touch for a watch that's supposed to be a GMT and for travel.
Yeah, certainly. I think my biggest issue with this watch are the hour markers on the dial. So these are like these pill shaped loom deposits that are inside of circular applied markers, and in the lighting in some of the press photos. So my kid watches SpongeBob, and there's this one episode where it's kind of like I don't know if it's if Squidward is like hallucinating or something, but his eyes are like kind of bulging, going back and forth, like bulging in or out, and the effect reminds me of what I see in these like it kind of looks like it's kind of popping in and out at like different sizes, and I know that's just kind of like a visual, it's my brain
weird
playing
memory
tricks on me, but but there's like a non-uniformity of these hour markers that kind of trips me out in a big way.
Yeah.
Zach Weiss, what do you think?
Yeah, now that I see that, I kind of can't unsee it. I feel like this my issue with this watch isn't necessarily the watch itself. Like I get the icon or Akon line, why it's there, that they were ahead of the curve, like you said, on some of these integrated sports watch kind of comeback thing. For me, my issue is that like everything has a detail on it that could be removed, and like maybe at least some of them shouldn't be there. So like, the little extra parts of the lug that are just kind of standing out, then the overgrip thing on the bezel, which and just adds up to like a lot to kind of digest. And like even those markers that you're talking about, like, I don't know if I dislike them, but I think in this context, I can't handle them. You know, like the fact that they rotate per angle for the angle of the hour, it's kind of cool. You know, they took a round thing and they alter it like on the right watch. That might be very effective in some way, but here it's just another thing to digest.
Some visual editing was needed here, big time, right? What does Fry say in Futurama? It's like that drug trip I saw in that movie while I was on that drug trip that one time. it's like this watch. So
I do wonder though, with your point, Blake, on the hour markers with the pill shape, it almost looks like the outside edges of that on the long part of the pill are actually angled down. So I wonder how that'll handle with light play. It might be actually interesting as far as being a little bit better with catching light visually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true. And I feel like there are things here that were like in principle, like very functional, that was driving a lot of this stuff. But in practice, sometimes things don't go as planned. But we've got some other people in the office here. We won't name names, Blake, that were quite taken with this watch. which is great. And I like seeing watches that kind of push the kind of emotions in collectors of, oh, what is that? Or, oh, I love that. And they give you something to embrace. All these watches should not look alike. And I think it's great when brands do something that is different, even if it's not to my own personal taste. So I guess that's my thoughts there. So that brings us to our main topic of today, which is about watch collecting, the watch collecting lifestyle, right? As we see it portrayed in some media outlets and on social media, versus kind of the reality of watch collecting lifestyle to us as we experience it as watch collectors, all four of us, and how it affects our collecting, and if it affects our collecting at all, or how we even think about our collecting. We put out a question on Instagram, and we got a lot of really great comments back and questions. Thank you to everyone who sent them in. And I think we'll have time to go through a few of these, but I kind of want to kick off this discussion talking about the existence of Instagram handles and magazines like Rob Report and websites like Watch Collecting Lifestyle that kind of present this vision of, you know, watch collecting is for this elite group of people that have a lot of money that are also into exotic cars and a lot of other just like really high end type stuff. And they kind of equate, they kind of place the hobby into a context that I think is very unfamiliar, at least to guys like us. And I know that it does resonate with a lot of watch collectors, and that's great. And I don't mean to bring them down at all. But probably for the vast majority of us, it's hard to identify with what we see represented here. And, you know, I'm thinking of some of the Instagram posts I see with like the steering wheel of a Rolls Royce and like 15 like Patek 5711s wrapped around it, you know, and then like 10 more up the wrist of the guy's arm.
Wasn't there some dude who like threw a bunch of steel Rolexes into like the sea a few months ago, and then he like he was some very weird and aggressive flex as he
was. Yeah, it's a little like ostentatious.
Like, I don't like these.
Yeah, it goes beyond just the like, this is how I use this watch in my everyday life.
Yeah.
Right. So do you guys notice this stuff? And if so, does it change how you think about watch collecting as a hobby? And does it change or influence your approach to your collecting behavior? Thomas, as a guest, I'd love to start with you.
Sure, thanks. Yeah, I think on one aspect, I think that it actually, I can sort of see what they're trying to do there, right? Because it is potentially aspirational. It's what people may want to look toward. And maybe it isn't realistic for everyone, but sometimes, you know, then being able to buy one of those watches or aspiring to own a watch like that might be, you know, the way that you can feel more connected to a world like that. And so I could, you know, I can see that aspect of it. But I think to your point, for the vast majority of us, that isn't necessarily reality. And I think actually there's sort of an echo chamber and a, you know, a reinforcing loop that we see on social media in general that makes people like all of the same things and not, you know, like what they like, right? So people may not want something that looks a little bit different and, you know, and feel safe and comfortable in appreciating that because they won't get the likes. Well, you know, we should all be owning and wearing what we like and not what we see others like necessarily, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And did you think that to some extent, this kind of content that has really kind of built up over the past, you know, 5 years, maybe more, I don't know. But like, does it account for the kind of bubbles that we see with watches like the 5711, like the 15202, like the Steel Daytonas? Because they're portrayed in such a way. So, you know, we kind of equate these watches with a certain lifestyle, and then we want to aspire to that lifestyle, and that watch kind of shows that we're a part of that in-group, and we live that kind of life. And if so, does it mar the appreciation that you might have for these watches taken out of that context, just as a watch lover and appreciator? You know, I like some of these watches, but then it kind of makes me cringe when I see them placed into this kind of context. Mm. And I don't want to like identify myself with that just because that's not the kind of life that I live. You know, if I, you know, had one of these fancy watches, I'd still wear it with the, you know, I'm not a very flashy guy or dressy guy. So, you know, I don't know. Like there's a big disconnect there. Like, does it affect how you guys view these watches that you might otherwise enjoy?
I think potentially it could, and especially when we think of things like genderless watches or just trying to think about who a watch is for, I think it can send the wrong kinds of messages as well. So again, it could be a positive for some, but it can be a turnoff definitely as well. So
yeah. Zach Kazan, what do you think?
I agree with Thomas. I think that it's it can definitely have an impact. You know, I know that when I am scrolling through Instagram and I just see like 5711 after 5711 or like Submariner after Submariner, like it just kind of bores me, like, more than anything. And I think I've been in the hobby long enough, and obviously, like, I work, you know, for Worn and Wound, like, I'm really in it in a way that, like, a lot of people probably aren't. And, like, I do see, like, different things, but it honestly just kind of, it depresses me, like, in a way, to see people just fixating on just a small handful of very specific watches, which I think, because of my exposure to lots of other things, are kind of boring. Like, there's just so much out there that's, like, to me, more interesting on almost every level than some of these hype watches. And I just wish that, you know, people could somehow kind of, like, break free of that hold that, like, the algorithm places on us, where we just see, like, the same thing over and over again. I think that there's an appetite for that, because, like, I hear about it from other collectors, and, like, we certainly read about it in the comments, but it persists. Like, we continue to see, you know, these same watches kind of have a grip on all of us in a way.
Yeah. That there's a question here that we got from somebody, JCV_Lomeli. Do you ever feel just like an addict or a consumerist? Sometimes I do. And I think this is kind of talking to, like, are we just kind of addicted to kind of the scroll, like the feed of seeing all this stuff kind of thrown back at us?
Very briefly, the beginning of this year, I like when I pick up Instagram, and this wasn't, like, related to New Year's or anything like that. It was more of like a self-awareness thing. I start scrolling, I'd be like, stop, just put it down. Because, yeah, I mean, I can spend way too long going through these same watches, and, you know, I don't know, I on my personal account I follow weird things like hashtag spring drive or like whatever, and so, but I see, like, but it'll kind of be about what I'm obsessed with at the moment, but it still gets very repetitious, and it's just sort of driving in me, at least sometimes, that kind of consumerist itch. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something I want to fight, the idea that, like, you know, I have to spend money to be happy, kind of a thing, which, you know, I is a bit of that, the addiction, sort of the dopamine, the, like, the fix side of it,
yeah.
Which isn't, you know, I think there's obviously much, much, much deeper levels to collecting things and watches in particular for us, you know, but sometimes I kind of get that, like, gnawing in the back of my head, like, oh man, if I buy this, will this experience be so great? And it's like, it's got to be a different intellectual thing, you know. Which, yeah, I mean, as the prices go up, I think becomes more of the concern, right? It's like, you know, you don't expect something that isn't really there, and you know, I think a little bit of this lifestyle conversation gets in there, because, yeah, I mean, you know, to what we were saying before, like, you see these fancy things, this portrayal of a lifestyle that isn't your own, and it's sort of like you're sort of projecting, like, well, right, that vintage sub or whatever it is, like, they'll get me a slice of that world.
Yeah.
And it's not, you live your life, the watch on your wrist isn't going to bring you there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that brings up there's another question here from andy.d92. is there a disconnect between buying new watches versus learning about watches?
That's a good question,
which is
that's
great,
really,
and I love this, and I think that it's kind of natural to be like, oh, I'm, you know, you're learning about this stuff, and then you just kind of, like, jump in with a purchase.
Yeah.
Right? But a lot of the enjoyment that we get out of it, and then you look back, like, after the purchase, and it, like, maybe sits in a watch box or you don't wear it so much, but the most fun you had with that watch was the process of learning about it before you actually bought it, which, maybe it was, like, a few months of, like, discovering and learning about it. And you know, so I think, like, learning how to translate that into, you know, you don't have to you know, it doesn't have to culminate with, like, this purchase at the end, or this is how we enjoy the hobby, right? Thomas, have you kind of had this experience, or you know, how have you evolved in time in this regard?
Yeah, I think both ends. I've made, you know, purchases just after seeing something, and I think that's actually an issue right now with a lot of brands because of things like limited editions and FOMO, right? You just want to get it before it's not available. So I think some of that is definitely a factor, right? You buy something physically, you know, in person, sight unseen, just because you want to try to get it. So I think there's some of that, but I think the learning about is a huge process. I think one of the interesting things, though, in trying to research, especially, let's say, a new watch or something that's just coming out, there's not as much variation on what you see online. It's a lot of the same press photos, and so it's hard to get a good extra picture of you know, what that watch might look like for you. And so it means you have to try to find other ways to learn more about it, wait until some people get it, you know, look at what their posts are online, things like that, because there's subtle things you'll miss in a stock photo or something along those lines. And that could be light play or thickness of a watch or something else, because obviously it's always portrayed in the best light. And, you know, showing its most positive assets. So I think there definitely is a disconnect. And sometimes, yeah, like learning about it is part of the fun part of the process, because you may go down a rabbit hole, research a whole world and say, oh, I actually like this other thing way better than the one I was originally looking at, and I just didn't even know about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Melbourne Watch is a familiar face to the enthusiast watch community, especially worn and wound readers. Founded in 2013, Melbourne is best known for producing stylish and affordable sport and dress watches that offer great value. Melbourne is backed with the Collins, the classically styled automatic moon phase, available in limited quantities at launch. Powered by the Swiss-made Sellita SW280 automatic movement, the Collins moon phase display pays homage to the Australian night sky, depicting the Southern Cross star constellation. At just $775 US, the Collins is a compelling package for anyone looking to get a mechanical complication not typically available at this price point. To learn more about the Melbourne Collins, head to melbournewatch.com. That's melbournewatch.com.
Yeah, and I want to jump to another question here because it kind of dovetails into what you just said. How do you, Henry M. Wills asks, how do you educate yourself without getting too heavily influenced by other people's tastes? So this is kind of touches on, I think maybe the other people's tastes that we see, that we kind of identify with, we can kind of guide us towards what we start, you know, to your point, like researching, and then we find out maybe something more interesting that's tangential to it that we can identify with more, and how you kind of let that process play out. Do you guys find yourselves being influenced by other people's taste in this regard?
Well, it's kind of funny. I feel like, you know, because we're such hardcore enthusiasts, and we're more likely to be researchers than buy, like research than buy than the impulse. But like that, this question sort of skirts around the idea that like the biggest thing in marketing right now is influencer marketing. So it's like, by definition, you know, this is like a very huge activity, and it's big in the watch world as well. And I think whether you realize it or not, a lot of the accounts you are following, and no disregard to them, I mean, they're doing what they do, but like they have risen to that status of influencer. So like, it certainly is a thing that's out there. And like, I guess, I mean, you know, okay, so for example, I'll just use myself as an example. A watch I purchased last year, Speedmaster 3594. I think I got that because I saw really sexy photos that eventually turned into the research phase. You know what I mean? Like, sure, it was that kind of like one day I was like, oh my God, like,
to justify your desire for it.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
or
yeah.
To reinforce the desire?
Maybe reinforce. Yeah, I don't know.
It kicked you off down that path.
Yeah, I got influenced. It happened to me. and then I like, you know, did my due diligence to think if this was really something I wanted. But that started with like, God, those photos that look so sexy, kind of a thing. I don't know. Yeah.
But is it okay to be, I see some press photos of watches and be, you know, okay. But then I'll see it in a nice picture on somebody's wrists with a nice outfit that I could see, like maybe it's like an outfit that I would wear. And then I think, oh, I really like how that looks. And, you know, I think it's okay. Like I was just influenced by that. And that gives me kind of more context to think about that watch in my own life. But I recognize the influence there. Right. So there has to, you know, it's not like you can just shut yourself off to the outside world. Like that's just not going to happen. So I think, you know, it's okay to confront and embrace to a certain degree, but maybe still like put a boundary around how it can affect your purchase decisions at the end of the day. I don't know. Like, how do you guys deal with this? Thomas, do you find yourself seeing this? Oh, sorry. Zach is in.
I was just going to say, I totally agree. I think it's okay to be influenced. Like we're all influenced by, you know, by each other, by other collectors, by you know, by what we read and research when it comes to watches. But you know, the word influence has kind of taken on this like second marketing meaning, which is kind of like it's a dirty word. And you know, you probably don't want to be influenced by you know, like a hashtag campaign on Instagram. Like, you don't want that to like be what leads you to like buying a new watch like entirely, because then you'll just like wind up throwing money away on stuff that is fleeting. But you know, if you develop you know, genuine interest in something and allow yourself to kind of like go down like the different tangents that it takes you down and talk to the people that you encounter, you know, through that process, like, I think it's normal and natural to be influenced by that process and those people.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, to the point about influencers or that whole concept, I guess at least for me and maybe for a lot of us, because we've been around for a little while, we've seen, you know, enough things online, you can tell when something isn't really genuine, right? And there's a difference to me between the influencer, you know, focus and the flashiness that sometimes comes with that versus somebody that I actually really appreciate their collection. And, you know, they're posting something where it's an excellent picture of a watch. And maybe that does influence me in a positive way, because if I trust somebody's tastes in other watches that I like and they post something that's new to me, that's more likely to get me to look at it than, you know, an influencer type post.
Yeah,
that's a really good point.
I mean, I imagine the answer to this is no, but has anybody here ever seen like a very intentional like celebrity placement and thought like, oh, now I'm interested in that watch?
The celebrity angle, I don't think, is for guys like us. Yeah. We need to hook up a video of these podcasts to go up on YouTube after the fact. Keep an eye out for that. Not that you want to see any of us, but we talk about some I don't know, some funny things happen here. So let's, yeah, I think and this is just like Chris Estro, how did like the social media negatively affect watch collecting? Right, like,
yeah. Yeah, how did it? I mean, I don't know.
But this is like I think the whole celebrity aspect of it.
Yeah. I think this is a topic I think I'd have to spend a lot more time really thinking about. But I'm going to put my foot in my mouth now anyway. But I feel like the fact that the sort of Instagram world of watches has sort of become very like egotistical and sort of about building a individual brand, even though that brand might not have really any goal beyond its own kind of getting built, has sort of tampered things. And I feel like it's created some sort of unnatural, I don't know, like cults or sort of like behaviors around watches and things like that, which like I personally just find distasteful, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't like to be a part of it or experience it sort of.
For me, I feel like it negatively affects collecting because these are watches that I maybe it would have some level of interest in, or watches that I find interesting for some reason or another get kind of pulled into this universe that I don't really identify with. And then that kind of like tarnishes my experience of that watch, which I don't want.
But certainly when there's something really obscure, like you've been eyeballing and then for whatever reason, hopefully not because we published something or something, but like it gets picked up and then you start seeing it everywhere and it feels like that thing that was yours is now kind of widespread, and I don't know.
Yeah. You know. But I think it's important, at the end of the day, like you kind of stay true to who you are, and even if it does blow up and get popular or whatever, like, you know that you bought it for the right reasons, or that, you know, you enjoy it for your own reasons, and you don't have to justify that to anybody else, right? There's another question from John C. Tam, who asks kind of how mixing these things. Can you be a collector as a watch enthusiast and an investor at the same time? Thomas, we'll let you handle that one.
I guess you could be. From my point of view, though, I don't try to think of my watches as investments. I think of them as something that'll bring me joy and something that I personally enjoy, and not necessarily what others enjoy. And so to me, I think, yes, theoretically, you could be doing that. But I guess I'm just not really focused on the investment aspect of it. A watch is meant, in my mind, to be worn and to build memories with and to really appreciate. And you know, if it gets dinged as a result of that, that's okay too, even if that means it's dropping in potential resale value.
I don't
you know, think it's a bad thing for people to do that. It's just not something that I like to do.
Yeah. What do you think, Zach, Zan?
I think you can be an investor and, what was the question, an investor and an enthusiast?
Or can you be a collector as a watch enthusiast and an investor at the same time?
Yeah, sure. I think you can. I think you just kind of have to like recognize within yourself like why you're doing something. Like there's nothing, I don't think watches are a good investment, like as a, you know, as a financial matter. Like I think, you know, I'm not certified to give advice, but like my, you know, personal feeling is that like if you want to invest money, like don't put it into a watch. Like that's generally like a bad idea. I think the numbers, you know, bear that out. But you know, if that's a decision you want to make, like you can certainly do that and also still genuinely love watches and be a, you know, a great collector and a, you know, a great enthusiast and have a real appreciation for them, and also look for watches that, you know, will, you know, if not like make you money, at least not like hurt you if you decide to let them go. So I think you can kind of like, you know, hold both ideas in your head simultaneously if you're, you know, if you're knowledgeable and careful about it.
Yeah. I guess when it's worked out in my favor, I'll call myself a savvy watch investor, but the many times that it hasn't, that's when I just call myself a passionate collector. You know?
Yeah, I'm not smart enough or playing with enough money, frankly, I think, to even touch the kind of watches that would matter. I mean, occasionally if I don't lose money on a watch, that's a win.
It's a win, yeah.
That's about it. And one or two watches have gained more value than I would have expected, but nothing to you know, nothing an investor would care about.
Yeah.
Certainly.
You don't even brag about your gains.
Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, the only thing I'd say that how that kind of relates to the question about like the research versus buying or whatever, like, you know, I really like that question because I think about some of the times I've really gone down rabbit holes, and those are the times I've known the most about those watches and those brands and everything about that watch and everything around it. And then I buy it and I stop reading about it, right? And then I kind of lose it. But then I feel like, if you're in maybe this investor place where it kind of encourages you to see these things a little bit differently, a little more abstractly. So like maybe the research doesn't end. So I could see doing both. I don't personally see me, this is something I'm going to do, but like a way to appreciate watches that is purely intellectual with some level of purchasing too, as part of, I don't know, kind of,
as long as it doesn't get in the way of you actually using the watch and enjoying it.
Yeah.
Right? Like I feel like,
or tying up your funds you need for life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Feed your family. First, and I think that kind of falls into the, and I think we got a few questions to this effect of like, you know, watches should be worn, you know, you shouldn't buy watches and stick them in a safe. And, you know, unless there's an element of like sentimental, value that you can place on these things, which I guess falls into a different realm. And there was a question, Austin 100s or Austin 100s, how many pieces in your collection are truly sentimental? Do you want more of these? Like, so is that something that you, that's like a requisite for keeping watches in your collection for the long term, that you develop some sort of like sentimental attachment to them? I would guess through the kinds of use that you put them through and the kinds of experiences that you have with them, just as much as my wife got me this for our wedding day types of sentimentality. You know, I tend to place more value in it if I've actually, like, through the experiences that I have with that watch, which I think I've talked about before. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a Submariner that I've done all kinds of crazy stuff with my son in, and that has a different kind of connection to me than, you know, I was gifted this watch or something like that. Do you guys think about your watches in this way?
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, you know, we all are in different places along our collecting journey. Some of them are sentimental. And I think one of the things that's great about that is it's, you know, if you want to pass down to children or something else, there can be a lot of sentimentality there. Or if you inherited a watch from maybe another family member that's gone before you, I really like that because it does give you that attachment to somebody else. But, you know, a lot of times with sentimental watches, you know, is it a watch you're going to replace if it's stolen or destroyed in a fire or something along those lines, right? So it's just something to think about. Part of the problem with collecting and having a lot of things is you have to deal with upkeep and maintenance and all of that, right? So I think another aspect is, you know, what do you really want in your collection? And so I think building memories with watches is actually really great, because honestly, it could be SKX 007, and you might really love that watch, and you may actually get it repaired, even though it costs more than getting a new one, right? Because you have memories with that watch. To me, a watch doesn't have to be expensive to mean something to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just something that we should probably focus on.
Yeah, 100%. That's a great point. I had my Seiko 7002 serviced a while back, and she said, you know, no, it's not worth that much. And I had to say, well, it is to me. And so, you know, can you please go through with the with it? And I still have it and wear it to this day. Zach Kazan, do you have any sentimental connections to the watches in your collections?
I'm not very sentimental when it comes to watches. I love the idea of like kind of building like a personal history with a watch. And, you know, I certainly have, that's certainly happened with me with certain watches, and there are watches that I own that I have no intention of selling, you know, for that reason. But, I, at the end of the day, for me, they're objects, and, you know, they might hold some memories, but like I have those memories like independently of the watch too. I think that, you know, we've talked about on the podcast before the idea of buying a watch to insert, you know, like a memory or like a sentimental, like, you know, value to it. And I think like that's something that I've certainly done. I know, Zach, you've talked about that.
Yeah, I'm good at this.
In the past, and I find that doesn't really work. I think that it's it's a better approach. Just kind of live with the watch, and if you do interesting things with it, then you'll have interesting memories with it, and that'll create a connection with the between you and the watch.
Mm-hmm. I think I've definitely talked about that, because it's something I think about, that like I bought too many watches flippantly, and then they've had no. They were tied to nothing at all. So it's like, do I wait for certain moments or something? But I think, you know, many of the best moments you can't plan for. And especially when you're looking in the present and the like near future, right? So it's like, I could tie some little event that could happen this year, a birthday or something. But like, I feel my biggest worry, and I'm kind of going with this, is that like, I'm too short-sighted with all of this to even know what sentimental attachments there are that I might have already lost with watches I sold or things like that. Like, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? Like I look back at some of the watches I sold, and now I think maybe there's a sentimentality I didn't see before because of X, Y, and Z, or, you know, the watch reminds me of a person that I didn't realize would be, you know, in or out of my life, that kind of a thing. Yeah. So yeah, it's a little tricky. It's a little tricky.
I think that's a good point. Like the gravity of those things sometimes doesn't sink in for
I mean, one thing, like, so like I'll never sell any of the LEs we make for Morning Wound. Those to me are like the artifacts of this journey, of my journey in Morning Wound, you know? And I, you know, right now they're just watches I wear. I'm hoping in 20, 30 years they're time machines to the what was going on in my life at that time, you know.
Yeah, I think about this a lot too, and this is one of the big things that has pushed me more towards modern watches in recent years than vintage watches, and I used to be really on the vintage watch train, and before it was hip even.
Oh yeah.
And, but now like I find myself wanting to buy the right watches that are maybe newer, so I can kind of have those experiences with them instead of having a watch that's kind of lived a lot of those experiences, and. It's hard to feel that way about, at least in my experiences with some of the vintage watches that I've felt, to kind of have that same connection versus kind of creating them, those memories with new ones. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a fancy watch either. We got a question from It Tells the Time. let's see here.
We know what they think about watches.
So friend. friend. So I think he's meaning to like quote a friend that is asking him something.
Okay.
Friend, quote, how can you say you're into watches when you're currently wearing a G-Shock? close quote. So yeah, and this is probably something that we've all dealt with. And it probably happens with Seikos as well. You know, I certainly have had it happen to me too. I'll never forget walking into, oh boy, there's a real kind of high-end watch shop in Carmel, Forton, I think is what it's called, and feeling like completely ridiculous because I had on that Seiko 7002 that I wore earlier, and like literally everyone else in there had these, you know, 5512s and 6263s and just like crazy vintage Rolexes and all that kind of stuff, and feeling like less of a, not person, but just like, oh, I'm not on this caliber. Even though like I was there for the same reasons, I was passionate about it in the same way that all those people were, and my, you know, and I you know, not in the position to be having like big red vintage Daytonas or anything like that. And then I don't think that should take anything away from, from me as a collector, but still, you know, it's like, how do you, I'm sure you guys have experienced this, and like, does it affect how you kind of view yourself in the context of other collectors?
I actually think, well, to answer the question first of the original question here, I would actually say back to the friend, how can you say you're into watches when you don't like G-Shock?
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, it's a classic, you know, yeah. Watch. It has an important history, you know? So I think it's a little bit short-sighted for people to say that. And quite honestly, one of the things that turns me off if I go into high-end places is if they do say, well, oh, that's just a such and such watch. Well, it means something to me. I'm the one wearing it, right? And so shame on you, because if you feel that way and that's how you think about watches, then, you know, I don't want to do business with you, right? You're not thinking about watches in the right way, because I love seeing anything. I could see a quartz Mickey Mouse watch or just whatever on somebody. If it means something to them and they want to tell their story, I want to hear that, because that tells me what they're passionate about.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about, right? It's all of us being on a journey together, because let's be honest, how many times in your day-to-day life do you get to talk with people about watches? That's why everything's online, because there aren't that many of us around. How many people actually notice what's on your wrist? Not many.
Yeah, that's a good point. Zach Kazan or Zach Weiss, have you guys experienced this before?
I would just say, like, in a little way, I used to go to more watch meetups in years ago, and there'd be some epic vintage Speedmasters on this table and the table full of the Rolexes, whatever. And then I would have like, you know, a couple of $200 to $300, you know, Miyota powered like micro brand watches that I was, you know, had or was in for review. And there was always a sort of a dismissive attitude towards it. Like, you're into watches, but you're not into these watches, are you? You know, kind of a thing. And it's just like, yeah, well, you know,
So be it.
Yeah, it was just, but I mean, to your point, like, to Tom's point, it was just like, well, you're just not the person I want to talk to watches about, sort of, in the end, you know?
Yeah.
But then there would always be a few people who, you know, to Thomas's point also, like, completely got it and just were interested in watches and were interested in brands and people trying to create things. And, you know, I think that it's changed a little bit now. The scene has grown and kind of gained footing in a larger way, so... But yeah, in the early days, there were some side eyes, you know?
yeah, definitely. Zach Kazan, have you experienced this?
I'm thinking about it. I really don't think I have. I think I'm pretty fortunate in that the, like the watch meetup circles that I'm a part of are pretty open and inviting and accepting of, you know, like a huge range of, you know, types of watches of all values. So that's not a situation that I've personally experienced, but if I were in that situation, if someone said, like, you know, how do you call yourself a watch collector or enthusiast with that Seiko or G-Shock? I think that's it's an opportunity to educate that person who, like, clearly, like, is not very knowledgeable about, you know, about that watch, you know, and that's maybe just kind of like the writer in me, like the enthusiast in me, like wanting to like talk about these things and explain to people why, what the like intrinsic value of like a Seiko or a G-Shock is. But like, that's how I would approach it. And I also just wouldn't really think too much of the opinion of that person, or really like any person. Like, ultimately, like, who cares, you know, like what anyone thinks about the watch that, you know, that you're wearing, as long as you like it. I think that's kind of the theme that we keep coming back to in this conversation, is that you have to, you know, wear the watches and own the watches that you get something out of, and not, you know, worry about the thoughts of the peanut gallery and then those around you.
Yeah. This is captured by another person that wrote in, RL Chris One, or real Chris One, maybe. Collect what you love. If you're not wearing your watches, something's very wrong. Well said. And then another one, J Caro 14. It seems that nowadays most collectors are only collecting to show them off on IG. I think that's a problem. You know, if before you buy a watch, the thought, how many likes would this generate in Instagram enters your brain, then maybe step away. Maybe step back and think about it a little bit more or a little bit longer.
Here's a quick follow up to that for everyone here. Have you found yourself wearing a watch list because it was very difficult to photograph?
Ooh.
I mean,
not
I'll
a good photographer, so everything's
it.
Difficult for me.
You're in the best position then. Yeah. So, like, I'll just follow up with that. Like, one of our LEs, Vero 36 automatic. If I could change one thing on that, it'd be the crystal, because the crystal just is a glare machine. So when I take a photo of that watch, I just get a photo of myself. And I do like to, you know, put up the watch I'm wearing on the day. Like, that's my mm-hmm. little contribution sort of thing to my Instagram. And so I wouldn't say I wear it less per se. Like, it's, you know, it's in the rotation. But I, when I wear it, I think about that, and it kind of, like, it's unfortunate, you know, and like, so, yeah, you know, yeah.
But in person,
it's
fine.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's just
the
pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just very hard. It's just like, yeah. I mean, it's just the way the glass interacts with light.
Yeah,
it's
no,
a black back
yeah,
dial,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the dance you have to sometimes do with a dial and a glare. Yeah. It's like, you know,
yeah, I feel you.
No, I've shown how vain I am now. So
yeah. Yeah. Thomas, do you get into photography at all?
A little bit, definitely not like you guys are. I think it's interesting though, to Zach's point about, you know, photographing a watch. It can be difficult sometimes, but I think in some other cases that actually does reflect to me in real life. Meaning, you know, if there's too much of a dome or there's too much distortion, that actually could make a watch less legible or less easy to read at a quick glance for me. And that actually could be a turnoff. So to me, I actually like to know sometimes if there is a glare issue or something along those lines with the watch. Yeah. So I actually tend to prefer flat sapphire instead of you know, anything that's super domed or curved.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. It's, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we've talked about it maybe before, but the watch is seen under a macro lens sometimes can unveil details that, you know, would mm-hmm. otherwise just kind of pass us by. So so there's another one that's kind of an inverse of one that we had earlier. How from a Mariash, how do you deal with friends or family who think you're wasting or flaunting money? Which, and I think to some people, just wearing a watch at all is like kind of a weird thing, and then maybe they equate it with the kind of like lifestyle stuff that they see out there and think that that's kind of, they kind of bundle you into that realm, which is unfortunate. And I would just kind of look at this as an opportunity to kind of share your passion with this person, and that would kind of be my answer to that. Do you guys have any advice there otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I think similarly, Blake, I think that person's probably into, you know, other things as well. Maybe they like shoes or purses, or they like to eat out, and that's their thing, right? And so I think it's just helping them understand that this is also a hobby. You know, it's something that you get joy out of. And so what's wrong with that, as long as, you know, we talked about earlier, you can put food on the table, right? If it's something that you get enjoyment out of, we all are wired about different things. And mm-hmm. so to me, to your point, yeah, educate him a little bit about why it's something that you enjoy, and then, you know, ask them about what they like and have a discussion about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Always an opportunity there. So there's one thing that I kind of want to like close out on, and that is, so, you know, I think we've maybe established that, that the depictions that we see of watch collecting and that lifestyle is not always true to form, for many of us, at least. So if you don't kind of see your, at least our style of watch collecting and that lifestyle, whatever that is, reflected in the media or social media, you know, how would you like to see it portrayed in social media? And what would you change to kind of more accurately represent just regular people who are passionate about it? You know, maybe they have budget collections, maybe they have really expensive collections, you know, whatever it is, but there's still this kind of thread that binds all of us together. Like, how should that be represented? Zach Kazan, why don't you take a stab?
I mean, that's like a really, it's like the, that's like the question, right? Like, I think that, you know, ultimately what I want to see represented in, you know, on social media and, you know, in watch publications like ours and others, is just like a diversity of watches and an honesty and transparency about it. I'm not interested in, you know, watches as like a signifier of wealth or status. Like, I'm interested in just, you know, watches as objects, as little pieces of history, as mechanical art, and I'm interested in that at like at any price point, as long as it can be communicated effectively and honestly. So I guess just like, you know, I'd like to see the fluff removed from the way watches are portrayed. I think that like it doesn't, you know, to go back to your earlier example of, you know, like the Nautiluses on the Rolls Royce steering wheel or whatever, that doesn't teach me anything about that watch. Like there are things worth knowing about like that Rolls Royce and that Nautilus that I'm not getting from that like image of just like flaunting wealth. Mm-hmm. So I guess like teach me something instead of just show me something.
Yeah. Yeah. Thomas, do you have any wisdom here for us?
About wisdom, but yeah, I like Zach Kazan's point about, you know, having a diversity of thought and of watches. But also I think inclusiveness is also important, right? So we should see, you know, more female collectors. We should see people being happy to, you know, support and encourage people to collect, right? Mm-hmm. And I think part of the fun thing with meetups where people are a little bit more open-minded in thinking about, you know, sharing back and forth is everybody's in a different place in their journey, right? You may have been collecting for 30 years and you have a lot of experience and somebody literally just got their first watch. If you can have a good discussion with them, that's what's important. And so I think, you know, from an online perspective, carry that into digital, right? Like how can we be more inclusive with each other? How can we like something that maybe is something we don't even necessarily like anymore, right? Like talk to people about it. Share knowledge that you have that may help them in their journey, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Zach Weiss, what do you think?
I agree, obviously, with both Zach and Thomas, and to not repeat anything they said too much. I guess the focus that I would like to add on to what they've said would be maybe a little bit more of a conversation and an eye towards design, contemporary watch design, and you know, rather than value, rather than brand recognition, you know, rather than scarcity and things like that, to turn it towards, you know, what does this, it could be about the 5711, I don't care, but like, why does that object, mm-hmm. what does it do for you on an aesthetic level, on an intellectual level, beyond dollar signs and the obvious sort of the things, you know? I think that Tissot watch we talked about earlier, I mean, obviously it's by a designer, but like that's a watch with like, you could really talk about a lot of aspects of it. It's very different from everything else. And I feel like that should make it a bigger story this week than, you know, I don't know what it would compare it to, but like then if some other brand X released another color of their main watch kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that end, we are trying to incorporate more of your voices, listeners. So don't be shy about letting us know your thoughts here, and we will do as best as we can to incorporate your voice alongside our own. It's just as important, and we need that. We need that diversity of expression here. So thank you to everyone again who wrote in. We really appreciate it, and I apologize to anyone whose questions we weren't able to get to. We will do another Q&A episode pretty soon, and we will probably be sharing more of the topics that we'll be talking about so that we can get your take on them as well in a more consistent fashion. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a huge pleasure having you on the podcast today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right, and he is at Watch Symmetry. Again, go give him a follow. And until next time, thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Worn and Wound podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then please leave us a review on iTunes, and also be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Looking for a new watch, a strap? Then visit windupwatchshop.com, and of course, head over to wornandwound.com daily for great watch content. Music tracks Nowhereland and Inspired are by Kevin MacLeod and are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0.